Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Fitness, fellowship, and faith. The fact that you could put those things together and not have Donald Trump by the third paragraph is kind of a miracle, a small miracle of journalism in this day and age.
They just simply get angry and they'll shut anybody out of their lives who keeps being that voice of conscience to them, because that's what they're trying to silence. They can't silence their own conscience, so they're going to try to silence yours.
He forgave sin, and the people at that time said, "Who can forgive sin but God only?" And Jesus didn't say, "Oops, sorry, I didn't really mean that." Jesus accepted that.
So we need to be hopeful, knowing that our hope is laid up in Christ and knowing that that is the motive for our actions. It doesn't mean that we think naively we're going to survive this, but that's not the point. The point is for us to be faithful.
Greek professors in Wisconsin listen to Issues Etc. while teaching verb paradigms. Paidoio, paidoies. Paidoie, paidoiomen, paidoiete, paidois.
With the overturn of Roe v. Wade, things changed rather drastically. One of the things that changed, and it was somewhat unexpected, was the apparent Republican attitude toward progress on the pro-life front. There are some pro-life Republicans who said, okay, now we got Roe overturned, and the Democrats are going to use this as a wedge issue in the upcoming midterms, so we need to just quiet down. There are many who are saying that that's a good idea, and some are saying, no, it isn't. Now's the time to go on the offense. Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about federal pro-life legislation with Marjorie Dannenfelser of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. A little bit later, Pastor Peter Bender joins us to discuss supporting single people in the congregation. Marjorie Dannenfelser is president of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America and author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled "The Political Case for Federal Abortion Limits." Marjorie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Why have the Democrats been spending so much on pro-abortion ads?
Well, I think we can all see it very plainly right in front of our eyes that the Democrats really don't have any issues. They've got a lot of issues running against them, and they've decided that abortion is the only issue that they can bend in their favor because of the overturn of Roe versus Wade very recently. That's why they're focused on that, and they've decided to do something that I believe that if our candidates allow them, could actually very well hurt our candidates. But if our candidates are smart, they'll really frame it in the way that it really is, which is this is a tremendous overreach and that they're really outstepping public opinion on this in battleground states where we will win or lose the House and Senate.
What do you make of Republicans who've been spooked by these ads?
Well, look, human nature is to be fearful in the eye of the enemy unless you're really prepared. And I think no matter how much we prepared, our guys, our governors, our senators, our members of the House of Representatives, state legislators, the heads of the parties, the party committees, the list goes on and is extensive. No matter how prepared we thought they were and how much we worked on that, the reality is always the enemy of theory. In theory, it sounded great. Roe versus Wade being overturned is the best news ever. But as in reality, if you're a legislator, that means it is your job not only to be ready to talk about it, but be ready to lead at an important point in the history of our nation, where, as history has shown, only a handful of leaders really are prepared to lead in really immense turning points in our nation's history. So I think it's just fear. They are, because they're fearful, they decided as a group, not all, but I would say the majority of the people that I just described, at least running for federal office, decided that this was something to turn away from, to allow, go ahead and allow the other side to pummel them, but to talk about other issues, but never actually to join the conversation and expose the extremism on the other side. So it's been met with fear in most cases, not all, and retreat in many cases, not all, and then with a failure to really paint the opponent as a true extremist in a context of a world where all we have to do now is come up with consensus. We can't even overreach by the power of one. All we have to do is allow legislatures to communicate the will of the people into the law.
Tell us about the minimum federal limit on abortion bill that was introduced recently by Senator Lindsey Graham.
So Senator Lindsey Graham has been the author of the 20-week pain-capable bill for several sessions of the U.S. Senate. And on the House, we've had Congressman Chris Smith do the same. And it has been at the center of all of our abortion arguments in elections, including when the president of the United States, Donald Trump, won against Hillary Clinton. He was arguing against late-term abortion in a way that was convincing and gruesome, in a way that put her on the defense. So, again, in a moment where it really matters, where it's not theoretical, in other words, the Supreme Court could allow us to enact laws that reflect the will of the people and all legislatures, including the Congress, in that moment, we need to actually have a bill that is very concrete, that says, okay, it is not where we want to be. 15 weeks, which is what the Mississippi Supreme Court case hinged on, 15 weeks was the Mississippi case. 15 weeks doesn't really please the whole pro-life movement. It certainly isn't something pro-choice people want, but it is a consensus piece of legislation to talk about during the federal elections and to place our candidates on firm ground and at least be a starting place for this brand new pro-life movement. That's what Lindsey Graham introduced, the 15-week pain-capable bill, which just means that's documented by science. When a child begins to feel pain, it's when you know their fingerprint, you know they start to, we know through science and vision, through ultrasound, they start to suck their left or their right thumb, depending on whether they're left or right-handed. It's an important point of science. It's an important point of political conversation that benefits our pro-life candidates. And it's also something that's very concrete to counter the claims of the other side that say a couple of things. One, that we're going to jail women if they break the law. This is simply untrue. Who pays the cost of abortions after any limit is the doctor who was with a woman in a very weak position, in a very vulnerable place. He knows he's breaking the law. He conspires to break the law. And he does break the law. He is the one that pays the price in each of these situations where we owe the woman much more. Also, that somehow miscarriages or ectopic pregnancies would somehow be outside of the law, simply a lie. So this bill that Lindsey Graham, the 15-week bill, what it does, it makes it very clear in that bill what the Republican position is, what the pro-life position is running, that makes it very clear that these crazy claims on the part of pro-abortion candidates are wrong. And then it sets out a very common sense, common ground, consensus place for candidates to run on.
How do you respond to those who question the timing of this particular bill?
It's my favorite question because the timing is perfect. The timing is exactly what is needed at a moment when there is hysteria surrounding the question of abortion and what our elected officials will do and what they won't do. It is very important that at this particular moment that it be made clear we will not jail women. We will not disallow healing from ectopic pregnancies, that we are setting out a very reasonable limit in light of an extreme position that our opponents have laid out, which is all abortion, all the time, paid for by taxpayers, enshrined in federal law, once again overturning every state piece of legislation that the will of people has put into law. So the timing is exactly what it should be. The only thing that is missing is a little bit of courage on the part of some of our candidates to make that perfectly clear.
How does the bill line up with public opinion?
One of the reasons that the bill is timing is so good is that it matches up exactly right now with what public opinion is. 72% of the American public agrees that abortion should be limited before 15 weeks, that it should go no longer. Of course, we want more than that, but at least that is a very common ground position. 10%, by contrast, think that abortion should be unlimited up until the end and paid for by taxpayers. So it's actually a 72-10% split a gift in politics that you almost never have. And if you have that, you should always run on it. And we have that on almost nothing. But that contrast is perfectly clear. Another point that I think is really important that really resonates with some, not all voters, is how we compare to the rest of the world. 47 out of 50 European nations limit abortion before 15 weeks, and the vast majority of those at 12 weeks. We are wildly out of step with the rest of the world. And the reason for that is our Supreme Court has not allowed for 50 years the ability of our legislators and the people of our country to build consensus into the law, because it said no matter what you say, no matter what limit you put down, it will be overturned by the Supreme Court. Now is the moment when democracy can flourish. The tools of democracy given to us by our founders will help bring civilized laws into regarding the unborn child and mothers into the law, and we will be more in line with the rest of the world. I mean, it's kind of crazy that we're out of line with places like France and Germany, Denmark, Sweden, that they're far more conservative than we are on this matter of social policy, because they were allowed to do it and we weren't.
How could the abortion issue actually work against Democratic candidates in the midterms? You mentioned earlier overplaying their hand.
They really are overplaying their hand because their voice has been so strong, because so far they have spent $200 million. Eventually they will spend $250 million on just the abortion issue. It's the top funded issue that they have run in all of their campaigns, second only to character, which is way down in terms of spending. And 20 times the amount of spending that they have ever done on the abortion issue in any election. And I think what they're doing is they're digging themselves into a pit. They're digging their own demise. Well, look, it's one of two ways, put it this way. If they go ahead and do that, and our candidates have no response, they just allow these blows to go unanswered, then it could actually work. If everyone believes that our candidates want to put women in jail, that ectopic pregnancies are somehow disallowed by limits on abortion, and you know, our candidates may lose. But if our candidates, with the help of the work that SBA Pro-Life America is doing, hear the contrast, then know our the contrast is we want a civilized, at a minimum, a floor of 15 weeks that allows every state legislature to be as ambitious as it can be, then that contrast is one that serves us every single time. The Democratic overreach makes it very clear, our candidates make it clear, that they are wildly out of step with the rest of the country. They are in step with 10% of the nation, and that our candidates are in step with 72% of the nation, 75% of women included, which think that abortion should be limited before 15 weeks at a minimum.
Why should pro-life Republicans go on the offense now?
I think if pro-life Republicans don't go on the offense now, they stand to lose. And how that hurts everybody is that we lose the House, we lose the Senate. Most importantly for the pro-life movement, we lose advocates, we lose foothold and leverageability. But we also, there's no question that because of what the Democrats have done to make this a top priority, it will be true that the abortion issue is why they lost. But it will be only because of political malpractice on the part and moral malpractice on the part of our own candidates. Our candidates need to speak clearly and convincingly and winsomely into this moment, speaking to a 72% issue, speaking compassionately about women and children and how we need more resources than just plain old volunteerism to serve the needs of women and children. That is the compelling and majority voice, and one that in battleground states and gubernatorial races, Senate races, and congressional races will win. Gaining their voice after a little bit of fear will mean that we gain the advantage in ways that put Democrats back on their heels and Republicans back where they ought to be, which is the moral high ground and also a politically advantageous high ground.
If Republicans retake the House and the Senate, can any pro-life federal legislation be advanced in the remainder of President Biden's term?
No, it really can't. So it's very clear that what we're talking about now is the national moral conversation about where we ought to be, a beginning of an entirely new pro-life movement where passing a law eventually isn't theoretical, it's real. It actually saves lives. We're seeing that. We already have in 15 states so far where abortion is either completely banned or limited 15 weeks or before, and mostly at heartbeat and from conception. So those are not theoretical. Real lives are being saved. Women are actually being served in ways that truly serve them. On the federal level, it's going to take a little while because we have a filibuster and because there keeps anything less than two-thirds of the Senate from going to the president, and this president we don't want to get to go to. But it does mean that we start a national conversation about who we are as a nation. Where do we want to be? Who do we want to be in line with in the rest of the world? Do we want to be in line with China and North Korea and Vietnam? Or do we want to be a civilized nation that at least says, how about this 15 weeks? I think the most important thing, or heartbeat, wherever it is, that conversation has to be happening in the House and the Senate, and building that momentum and that consensus within the House and the Senate to pass something that is the most ambitious that we can possibly pass. The next stage will be, of course, that national conversation within the presidential campaign among presidential primary candidates on the Republican side, where there will be many into the teens talking about this, where we ought to be. And so the fear that we talked about at the beginning of this conversation here today with you cannot be at the center of those conversations. It has to be open and transparent where a nation ought to be, understanding where we have a majority opinion, understanding what we owe women and children, understanding what the Constitution says about the federal authority that we have and responsibility that we have to allow the nation's opinion to make its way into federal law as well. So those presidential primary conversations will be key because, you know what, as you well know, the presidential primary process begins the day after the midterms are over.
Marjorie Dannenfelser is president of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. She's author of a recent column for The Wall Street Journal titled The Political Case for Federal Abortion Limits. You'll find a link to it and to Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Marjorie, thank you very much.
Thanks so much. It's a privilege to be with you again.
We'll be talking about supporting single people in the congregation. Pastor Peter Bender will join us here in the studio next. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
When pastors talk about us, they say ad crucem. When laity mention us, they say ad crucem. When telemarketers call us, they say ADC Rucam. But a Luther Rose by any name will smell as sweet. Ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards and artwork, jewelry and ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and much more. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is your child struggling at school? Are you thinking about homeschooling? Would you like help knowing what to teach and how to teach it? The Simply Classical curriculum from Memoria Press provides an enriching, step-by-step classical Christian education for students who have autism, learning or behavioral difficulties, ADHD, and more. You'll find everything you need, including daily lesson plans to guide your way. Learn more at simplyclassical.com. Use LPR23 to save on your order. Simplyclassical.com.
Come and hear abortion survivor Melissa Oden, Jeannie Mancini from the March for Life, Blaze TV radio host Steve Dace, and other great speakers at the 2022 Lutherans for Life National Conference, Friday and Saturday, October 21st and 22nd in Rock Island, Illinois. Bless for Life is the theme. Learn more at lutheransforlife.org/conference. And while you're there, check out Why for Life and Lutherans for Life at the January 2023 National March for Life in Washington, D.C.